This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeff's guests appear on the Frame Corner phone lines. Frame Corner, with expert custom and do-it-yourself framing since 1975 on Park Avenue in East Memphis. Now, back to the Jeff Calkins Show, live from the Genesis Memphis Covington Pike Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal.
Now, it's Chris Herrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Herrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's No Baby by Sun Seals from his mid-70s album Midnight Sun. A little Chicago blues for the Memphis Grizzlies, perhaps heading to Chicago today with the blues.
Headed to Chicago, then Indiana, then back to Miami. Do you think this preseason is too long?
No, I mean, it used to be 8 games. That used to be the preseason norm, and now like 5. I think.
Yeah.
I think 5 games. Yeah.
About right. Okay. Anyway, I did want to get into your history-making purchase of Chick-fil-A. You obviously had your paparazzi following you around yesterday when you stepped up to the Chick-fil-A counter. And what'd you get?
Literally hiding around the corner with a camera.
Popped out of the proverbial bushes. Right.
Wasn't even waiting for me. He was waiting for someone to be the first customer because he didn't want to be the first customer.
It's really a cowardly
act, I would say. I would label it a cowardly act by Drew Hill.
Oh, he was waiting for someone, and you unawares stepped into the trap.
So, right.
And then he tweeted it out. So what'd you get?
I got a spicy chicken sandwich box. I got the meal box. And it was fine. It tasted like a Chick-fil-A sandwich, which is, you know, a good-tasting thing. And
right.
It's not waffle fries. It's waffle chips.
Yeah,
I may have gotten that wrong when I wrote the story because I couldn't really see the sign that well. But it makes sense. If they're not cooking on site, you don't want fries, like, cooked beforehand and brought in. That's not good. But it was good.
It was a perfectly fine meal. If you had been given it at a Chick-fil-A that you drove through, you would not have noticed a difference. It
is a real Chick-fil-A sandwich. It is not an imitation Chick-fil-A sandwich. It is the authentic Chick-fil-A sandwich.
And how do you feel about it? By the way, I think your story did say the chips, because I remember reading it to Jeffrey and I discussed the box. He is a believer in the Chick-fil-A cookie. How do you like the Chick-fil-A fries?
Oh, the cookie is good. I don't think I'd ever had the cookie till last night. It's a good cookie.
He's a believer, yeah. How do you generally like, the fries are not available, obvious effects for them, but how do you like Chick-fil-A fries? Where do they rank in your pantheon?
Oh, they're not my favorite. I don't remember whether it was the Ringer or Grantland, but there was the ridiculous, they did like a list a few years ago of like the greatest fast food items in America. And their number one was the Chick-fil-A fries.
Stupid.
And that was some really silly stuff. No, they're fine. I like a McDonald's fry.
Right. All right. You were there, obviously, eating Chick-fil-A and then watching the Grizzlies go down to defeat and another injury. What was the sense you got? Obviously, knee on knee for Marcus Smart. Came back into the game, left again. What's your sense?
He said after the game that basically if it were regular season, he would have been still kept playing.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't make much out of that. It is, I know people are really like on edge about any Grizzly injury stuff, and there are durability questions with the roster, as I have written about, and I will again. But when it comes to preseason, like literally, like any excuse not to play somebody is a matter of like they'll do it, you know?
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. And then the good news was, because we talked yesterday, we expect Ja to play. We, you know, whatever. But then there was the general thought was that Jaren would be ready for opening day. And I guess in pregame, Taylor Jenkins said the expectation is that they, meaning both Ja and Jaren, will be ready.
Yeah, he put a finer point on that than I think he had before. And so I think they are sensitive to the fan base's sensitivity around injuries. And so he was very clear that the full expectation is that Ja and Jaren will both be their opening night. And it was basically communicated, not by Taylor Jenkins, but by others in the organization, that the Brandon Clark thing is in the similar bucket. That is strictly a preseason precaution thing. They're not worried about it. So we'll see.
All right. Then in terms of what we saw last night, kind of a rough night for Zach Edey. What'd you think?
Yeah, so there are two things that really jumped out to me about last night. That's one of them. I think they both relate a little bit to sort of all this, the intense focus that we've had early in training camp, early in preseason on like the new offense they're trying to partly install or fully install but partly utilize, I think. But that's where the focus is right now, and on the newness, the new stuff, and the pace, and the principles, and the blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I think there are two things about last night's game that really jump out to me about that. One of them is Zach Edey. Zach Edey's a rookie. He's a rookie who's played his second preseason game. He played one summer league game. Like, I think he really looked like a rookie last night. You can see him sort of, you know, swimming a little bit. Like, yep. It is, you know, trying to get a feel for things. I think that is to be expected. Games like that are should be par for the course, should be expected. I think that's just a natural part of being a rookie. But I do think the magnitude of the stylistic change that he is going, that he is, and Taylor Jenkins talked about this a little bit after the game, the magnitude of the stylistic change that he is, like, being asked to undertake from what he did in college to what he's doing right now in these preseason games, I think exacerbates those growing pains. Remember when they drafted Zach Edey on draft night before, like, we knew, you know, it had been hinted, but we didn't really know about the collective basketball come. When they drafted Zach Edey, we thought, okay, we've seen Jonas Valanciunas, we've seen Steven Adams, and they're all different people, but there's a rough approximation here. Like, you play high pick and roll with John Morant, and you crash the offensive glass, and you get an occasional post-up, and then on defense, like, you know, you take up space, and Jaren Jackson goes nuts, and this works. This is going to work. And I think it will work, but A, he hasn't played with Jaren at all. He hasn't played very much with Ja, and he's not playing that style. And even like relative to like the one summer league game he played, like my memory of that summer league game is he was setting a lot of screens like really high, and guards were just like penetrating off of that. Not really doing that either. So I don't know if I feel like we're getting optimal Zach Edey usage, which I think enhances the growing pains with it.
Yeah, it's interesting because when this was unfolding this summer, you know, you had the assistant coaches being hired and then the Zach Edey pick. And part of the thought was, well, it couldn't be too dramatic what they're doing if they're picking Zach Edey, you know, and yet they're persisting. And who knows, maybe it'll look great.
Taylor Jenkins keeps talking about how, like, we're, you know, this is not everything. You know, we're starting with the new stuff, and then we're going to add in the pick and roll and add in. And so I think they are not overemphasizing, but they're particularly emphasizing this new stuff now on the front end. And I don't think they will be as reliant on it, you know, across 48 minutes as you keep moving forward. And that is my hunch.
23 turnovers in the previous game, 22 again last night. Again, it's a mishmash of a lineup, but that will happen in preseason almost for everybody. And it is interesting, like, even Santi Aldama in the piece that Drew did a piece about Santi and whether this is in any way familiar and similar to what they do on the Spanish national team. And just passingly, he says, it has been tough to adjust, but I think we'll be very good once it all starts clicking. So, like, there's sort of an acknowledgement that this is a big adjustment. You do wonder, like, we had talked earlier about this would be good maybe just for our morale, for the fans' morale, for them to get off to a strong start. With the – you wonder if you're going to look up in 8 games, there's going to be a bunch of turnovers, it's going to look like a mess, and people are going to say, what the hell are we doing here?
Yeah, no, I mean, that is a concern of mine. There's the question of like tissue rejection sometimes when you try to do new stuff with a team that has had success with previous stuff. We've seen that in the past. And so I wonder a little bit about that. But the other thing, and this is sort of related, I mentioned two things jumped out at me last night.
Yep.
The other thing was, so, I mean, obviously they were missing five of what would be their 10-man rotation if everyone were healthy. And so they were missing five of their better players. But I think even more than that, they were missing five of their more athletic players. And right. I think last night what really jumped out to me was some of the lack of athleticism on the roster. And like Taylor Jenkins, like after the game, said, you know, we didn't have our pop tonight. I wanted to say your pop was in street clothes.
Right.
And when you think about what they're doing stylistically, like some of the new jargon is advantage creation, right? Advantage creators. And what that seems to mean in a lot of these sets is you have people like trying to get into the lane without the help of a screen. You're just driving one-on-one against your defender to get into the paint, and then you get movement and cutting and sort of activity off of that, right? So the person driving without a screen is creating the advantage that others are reacting to. Well, last night, a lot of times that meant Luke Kennard and John Conchar and Jake LaRavia and Marcus Smart trying to drive into the paint
right.
against the defender without a screen. And, like, those should be the guys benefiting from the advantage creation, not creating the advantage, right? And so, obviously, it looks different when you got, you know, John Morant and Jared Jackson and whatever out there. But I just wonder about some of the lack of athleticism and trying to put those players into those kind of roles. And to me, it's not surprising that that would be a little bit of a struggle.
So missing Ja, Jaren, GG, Vince, and Brandon.
Right.
Pretty much. That's
a lot
your
of the athleticism of the roster.
On the other hand, you do have Jay Huff.
Jay Huff looked good.
He did look good in that game. Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, he was very good. Steve Conley called him the diamond in the Huff.
I like that.
I thought it was okay, actually. I partly grimaced and partly smiled. So, anyway, diamond in the Huff. What's interesting is, I guess I'm surprised, and you've mentioned this before, like, the things he does, of course he's thin and he's not particularly mobile, but the things that he does, which is block shots and hit threes, he's done since college. He shot 39% from three in college. So, and he was led the ACC in shot blocking. That should translate.
He was also the defensive player of the year in the G League 2 years ago. I don't understand why he hasn't yet been on a roster. Yeah. I think there's a good chance he'll be on this one before the season's over. I mean, all around the league, people want like centers who can like shoot threes and also protect the rim a little bit, and like he can do those things. He's not Rudy Gobert, but he's like 7'1", and he's like a fairly solid 7'1", and he gives you at least some kind of presence there. And I think given that the Grizzlies only have four real bigs on the main roster, I think he's going to play a ton. He's not going to play with the Memphis Hustle. He's going to be a member of the Memphis Grizzlies for at least 50 games. And I think he's going to be, not every night, but like how many nights are you going to have, you know, Clark, Edie, Jaren, and Santi all available? You hope a lot, but probably not a lot. You know, the chances are one of those guys is out. So I think Jay Huff is going to play a lot for the Grizzlies this season.
If he plays those 50 games, he has played previously 31 games, 4 for the Lakers, 7 for the Wizards, and 20 with Denver. Jarvis is a listener, and he was texting in, and he said the sound system sounded great. Now, you were there, obviously, for the open practice. Did you notice it particularly again last night?
I know. Someone asked me last night, like, do you notice the change in the sound system? And I was like, if I hadn't been told there was a new sound system, I probably wouldn't notice.
Right.
Which is not to say it's not better. I just sort of, I think that's the thing I would just tend not to notice in a basketball game, you know?
Yeah.
So it's more of a me thing.
All right, well, I like your metaphors. We went from tissue rejection with the, whether there will be tissue rejection with the offense, to the stereo, which you've used before with Jaren Jackson Jr. You've got a piece up on Jaren, and you use the stereo metaphor. How does the stereo metaphor...
I elaborated on the theme this time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Remind the people, how is Jaren Jackson like a stereo?
He does so many different things that getting the best version of Jaren is tricky because it's not just about doing more generally. And so it's not like you don't just crank up the volume to get better sound. Volume meaning, you know, volume of things you do, the usage, the player's usage rate. It's about like the right balance of defense, the right balance of 3-point shooting, the right balance of creating with the ball. And so like my joke was that instead of like the base, it's a block rate, instead of treble, it's trays. And so like, you know, adjusting the various like levels of different aspects of his game to get the best total impact for the team, I think has been tricky and continues to be tricky. It is the very definition of a good problem to have.
When have we seen the best Jaren? Of the years we've had so far, what has been the best Jaren? And even in that Jaren, is there something you would have wanted more of?
Oh, I think the best season he's had overall was 2 years ago. I mean, year one defensive player of the year.
Yeah.
Where his offensive usage was not his scoring. He averaged, you know, 17 points a game instead of 21 or whatever. So it was not what it was last season, but it was still like good offense paired with like absolutely elite, like wrecking the world defense. And I do think with Jaren, as skilled as he is offensively, he is a defense first player. And the most important part of his game to impacting team basketball starts on the defensive end. So I want a Jaren that is like, you know, sort of your third option on offense, but is like your best defensive player and is putting the emphasis on the defensive end. I think the hope this season would be that the usage gets dialed back, but the skills he had to hone last year when he just had the ball all the time, becoming a little bit better passer, becoming a little bit better off the dribble creator, that you can incorporate those skills, but a little bit less of it and incorporate it into some more advantageous situations. I think it's certainly possible that the best is yet to come with Jaren.
Yeah, so you'd like 2 years ago defense. Of course, you'd like, but don't expect year two shooting, year two Jaren shooting from three, which you don't expect, and then some of the skills from last year as he expanded his game. What do you expect from like then that second year, 39% shooting? I think it was from three.
But 2 years ago, he was like right just under 36%. Like right. I'll take that.
Right.
You know, I'm happy to get that. And so give me like the 36% 3-point shooting and like top one of the three or four best defensive players in the league. And then, you know, you create a little bit off the dribble. Like I'll take all that.
One of the things that is interesting to me is Jaren's perspective on all this. Like, does Jaren have a sense of what version of Jaren he'd like to be?
You know, with stuff like that, the question is what players believe and what players say. And we don't know what they believe. We just know what they say.
Right, that's true.
And so I think, you know, Jaren is a guy who has a lot of confidence, and it's like he's basically like, you know, he'll try to do everything, every part of his game, he'll try to do as well as possible. It's really up to the coaches and the team situation to sort of guide that. And I do think we got a hint from Brandon Clark on Media Day where he said, probably speaking out of school a little bit, he said, you know, coach just said we want Jaren to get back to the defense he played 2 years ago. And I do think that suggests to me that is more that is a focus of the coaching staff, and I think is a proper focus.
Chris, have a safe drive back to Minnesota, and we'll see you back here for the home opener. Thanks very much.
All right.
Chris Harrington, you can read that piece over at the Daily Memphian. You can be ordering the $9 chicken sandwich.
Chances are probably decent, although as we
you get the
about
barbecue nachos.
I'm a nacho guy.
Just go up to the $14 and get the barbecue nachos. And if you get the barbecue nachos, that's a complete meal. It's a balanced meal, Jeffrey. Whereas with the chicken sandwich, you're also going to need either the chicken sandwich box, you're going to need the fries. There's something, right? You're going to need something with it. Whereas with barbecue nachos, you got your cheese. You got your vegetables because it's got the tomatoes. You know, it's got a sauce there, right? It must have some vegetables involved in that. It's got your proteins with your pork. And then it's got your, you know, your carbs, your basic bread of life with the chips. So that strikes me as the way to go. Anyway, we're going to do Jeffrey's bets on the other side. And then Alex Simmons from the University of Memphis is going to join us busy right to the end here. I will tell you first that we got the Bills versus the Jets. my beloved Buffalo Bills Monday night. And over at FanDuel, you can wager on that game. And if you're a new customer, if you bet and win a $5 bet, bet $5 and win, and you get $300 in bonus bets. So just go all Bills. Go all Bills. You know, just whatever. Dalton Kincaid, Josh Allen, Bills win, Bills cover, whatever it is. Do you just go all in on the Bills on this one for me. But in the meantime, go to FanDuel.com/Calkins to sign up. That's the promo code, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Once again, bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets if you win. FanDuel is, of course, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager, only $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Jeffrey's bets when we return. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Jeffrey had a big week last week, 8-4. How are you feeling about this card, Jeffrey?
Jeff, I feel okay, not great, but we do have some system play, so we're pretty excited about that.
All right, let's hit it.
All right, Jeff, I don't know if you've been keeping up, but Friday nights, the dogs have been barking. Underdogs on Friday night games this season, 13-4 against the spread. Shout out to Ben Calkins, who is heading to see his Bills on Monday night. Hopefully it's a winning week for Ben Calkins, because I'm taking the Northwestern Cats. Give me the 11 against Maryland tonight.
Northwestern minus 11 over Maryland. Go Cats. Next.
Jeff, Missouri couldn't have looked any worse than they did last week. You know what the antidote is?
What's that?
UMass. Missouri, for some reason, heading to UMass to take on the Minutemen. Not that often that you get a Power 4 team taking on UMass. UMass is yet to play a Power 5 team or 4, whatever we're calling it, this year. I'll lay the 27, Missouri. I don't care.
Missouri plus 27 over UMass. Next.
Jeff, part of my problem with Dabo Swinney the last few years, everyone else wants to call him out for the transfer portal, all of that. No. My problem is, he's been letting Wake Forest cover.
Oh, no.
It's time to get back to business. It used to be my favorite bet of the year. Anytime Clemson would take on Wake, we would always lay the number with Clemson. We're going back to it. Wake Forest stinks. Clemson trending very nicely. I'll lay 20.
Clemson minus 20 over Wake Forest. Next.
Jeff, Kirk Ferentz, when favored by 3 points or fewer, in his career, he's 21-12 against the number. Since 2015, he's 13-3. We also have a system play. Iowa taking on Washington. Washington having to fly across the country. They go multiple time zones. They also had the big win against Michigan. I'll lay the 3. Give me Iowa.
That's an interesting thing. The two time zones has proved to be very difficult for teams to handle. This feels like a matchup of two, you know, just totally mediocre Big Ten teams.
Absolutely. Give me the home team.
Okay. Iowa minus 3 over the Huskies. Next.
Speaking of time zones, let's stick with it. Pitt is hosting Cal. The number is 3. Pat Narduzzi, when he's favored by a touchdown or fewer, is 20-10-2 in his career. Cal with a devastating, gut-wrenching, terrible loss last week, blowing a 25-point second-half lead. I'll trust the Panthers. I'll lay the 3.
And now they fly to Pittsburgh.
Correct.
This is what's wrong with America.
For a classic ACC battle.
Cal is flying to Pittsburgh for a classic ACC battle. Next.
Jeff, let's go to the artist formerly known as the Red River Shootout. Texas taking on Oklahoma. Jeff, I know everyone thinks you just always take the underdog in this game. Well, we don't. We're taking the favorite. I think Texas is way better. Oklahoma's offense has been Yuck. 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 I'll lay the 14. This is kind of fading the public.
Quinn Ewers making his return, obviously. The stats for Texas's pass defense, they've given up one passing touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
To go with seven interceptions.
Now, they've played some horrific passing offenses. Yes.
They have played some horrific passing offenses. But still. All right. Texas minus 14 in the Red River rivalry.
Jeff, we've got next. A game that you can go watch at Birdies. That will be where the Memphis Maroon Club will be watching that. The Georgia game. Bulldogs, underdogs of 34 points. I should say the Mississippi State Bulldogs are underdogs of 34 points. I'm not touching that total, but we did learn something when the Bulldogs took on Texas a few weeks ago. Without their starting quarterback, they are not running tempo. They are running the ball. They are doing the let's
not get murdered.
Let's keep this close. I got a total of 55. I'll go under. I'll say neither team wants to push the issue. Georgia, of course, has Texas on deck.
Next.
Jeff, the Tennessee Vols. They are 1-9 against Florida since 1995 as a favorite. I don't care. Here's what it comes down to for me. Tennessee, their whole offense, it needs to just get clicking. They need drive starters.
Clicking.
Got to get those drives started.
Yeah.
Florida, 118th in the country in allowing drives to get started. That is a bad format. I think the way to beat the Tennessee Vols is to hold the football. Florida does not hold the football. I'll lay the 14.
This used to be the biggest game of the year.
The third Saturday.
Where is it in now
September?
In the Tennessee, like, important games?
It trails. It's still really important to them because they still have Florida.
They can't lose it.
Yeah, and they still have
Florida players.
Well, they just
Florida,
you know,
history. What
they
is
haven't.
It the,
they have not had success against Florida,
so it still matters.
Correct.
Tennessee, of course, it still matters. It's just interesting. I always used to cover this game. I had scheduled to come out. Whatever. Wherever it was, I was there.
With the loss of divisions, obviously, yeah. it lacks as
Tennessee
important.
Minus 14 over the Gators. And here's a massive one, Jeffrey.
Jeff, we got Ole Miss heading to Baton Rouge, taking on the
Ridiculous.
Tigers. Point total is 62. That's too many points. In the last 2 years, when Ole Miss has been a road favorite, under has hit with ease. I know these two teams scored 90-something points last year. I'm taking the under. This is a numbers play. 62 is too many.
Okay. If you had to bet the line, what would you do? It's three, right? Almost
I would
favored
need
by
to
three.
See, I need to see the injury report. If Trey Harris plays, I'm probably playing Ole Miss.
You'd go ahead and play Ole Miss.
Yes, because I
lay
think
the three.
Both. I think while LSU's offense is probably better than Ole Miss's offense, the gap between Ole Miss and LSU's offense is smaller than the gap between Ole Miss's defense and LSU's defense.
Another massive game.
Jeff, we're breaking the system play.
Mm-hmm.
This is just, I do this every single year with Ohio State. Whenever I form an opinion, I let numbers talk me out of it. I'm not doing it. Ohio State's a better football team than Oregon. I don't know how Oregon blocks Ohio State. I don't care that this is multiple time zones. I don't care that this line stinks. I'm viewing it as a gift. Give me Ohio State. I'll lay the three.
Ohio State minus three over Oregon. A couple that you didn't mention. You got Penn State, USC.
Line stinks.
What's the line?
It's like 3.5. A top four team against an unranked team with a 3.5-point line. It's so stinky that it makes me want to take USC. But there's a reason it's not on the card.
How about bounce back Alabama? What's the line there?
21.5. I think it's the flex spot. I just think everybody's thinking it's the flex spot. If I had to play it, I can't bet on Lenoris Sellers, so I'd probably lay the points. But there's a reason it's not on the card either.
How about K-State and Colorado? A lot of games
K-State
in that conference.
K-State stinks away from home. I wonder if Colorado's overvalued because UCF is not good. But I can't bet on Avery Johnson away from home. I think K-State's one of those teams that you take them at home, you lay them on the road. So I guess I'd say give me the points.
Fun weekend of college football. Here's the card. Go ahead and take Northwestern.
Go Cats.
Go Cats. You get 11 there. Northwestern plus 11 over Maryland. Missouri plus minus 27 over UMass. Clemson minus 20 over Wake Forest. Iowa minus 3 over Washington. Pittsburgh minus 3 over Cal. Texas minus a lot of favorites here. Texas minus 14 over Oklahoma. Georgia and Mississippi State take the under 55. Tennessee minus 14 over Florida. Ole Miss and LSU under 62. And go ahead, Ohio State lay the 3 over Oregon. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in a moment with Alex Simmons. She's the head coach of the University of Memphis women's basketball team. We'll talk to her about the St. Jude Tip-Off Classic coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.